Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. Do not forget to buy lentils, or the lentil soup you're making for dinner will be sorely lacking. By the way, Mrs. Calloway says thanks for helping her bundle home and auto. She appreciates the extra savings, even though you kept using the word apropos incorrectly. But the main thing is, do not forget to buy, what was it? Something apropos the lentil soup. Sorry, I'll call you back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. Harrison will not be with us tonight or today, but you know who will be? And I am thrilled to make this announcement, but the Kamenetsky brothers of ESPN LA, ESPN 710, the Land of Lakers blog, but you know, which is now the Kamenetsky brothers podcast. They're great. They're going to be on the show here in a second, but before we get to that, make sure you are following the show on Audio Booms, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code. And today's show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. So make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get 20% off of the merchandise there at Mack Weldon. Great products. They are, you know, they're better than what you're wearing right now. We can pretty much guarantee you that. Unless you're wearing Mack Weldon, in which case, congratulations. Now buy more of that stuff for 20% off. Usually, you know, with situations with guests, we go through the rundown of whatever's going on with the Lakers. There's nothing really going on with the Lakers, so let's go ahead and toss you right over to the show with the Kamenetsky brothers. Again, you listen to this from start to finish. It's going to be great. It is great. It's already been recorded. I'm recording this after the fact. It was great. They are hashtag great. How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you, man?
Doing good. Thanks.
I'm holding up. I'm ready for the season to start already. I'm really sick of talking about the 15th guy on the Lakers roster.
Yeah, I could get this thing started too.
So we'll just start with the general stuff regarding the team, and then we'll kind of see where the conversation takes us there. The first player I feel like you have to talk about anytime you bring up the Lakers nowadays is D'Angelo Russell. And I almost said Kobe Bryant out of habit, but it has to be D'Angelo Russell.
He'll still come up.
Yeah, he is. There was a full night spent on Twitter talking about who got his locker. So that was
That's fun. True.
So I'll start with Andy. If you were to rate his preseason so far, 1 to 10, where would you place his preseason, would you say?
Russell?
Yep.
I'd give it about an 8, you know, yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. I think by and large, he's looked terrific. I mean, if you look at his numbers, he's shooting well from the field. He's shooting well from three. He's doing a better job of distributing, and I think he has more options this year in terms of trying to play make and set up his teammates. You know, defensively, he still has his issues, but I don't think it's for a lack of effort. I think it's because this is the first year he's actually being coached, frankly, on either side of the ball, but specifically defensively. And most important to me with Russell, you can see that he has been empowered as a leader. Mm-hmm. And he's been given onus of this team. And the confidence – knock it off, Brian. Knock it
sneeze.
Off.
Got to sneeze. Sometimes you got to sneeze, man.
I'm saying important things. Don't get in the way of this. You can see just the control that he feels comfortable exerting over a game. And I think you're seeing growth in him as a player and also just maturity. Brian and I have both been around him this preseason. We both noticed, and obviously it's early, so things could change, but he seems much more mature this preseason than he did last year.
That's kind of where I wanted to go with with Brian was that, yeah, I'm watching as an outsider, and I'm watching, you know, even subconsciously, it's impossible not to be biased, hoping that the kid puts it together. But it really looks like, with stuff he's saying off the court and the way he handles himself on the court, that he was really ready to be a leader this year.
I think he's responded to Walton. I mean, it's. I think we can all agree he and Byron were not exactly a great combination. And so I don't think that's something we got to dig real deep on. And so, yeah, he's obviously responded very well to Luke. But some of it is that I think, you know, that he is being treated and empowered like a leader, like Andy says, I think is important to him. I think it's helping validate him. But I asked him, you know, every great player will tell you that when they step out on the floor, they think they're the best guy, you know, and whether they should or shouldn't is a matter for debate, you know. But CJ McCollum may not be better than Chris Paul, but when he goes out on the floor, he thinks he is. Mm-hmm. And I asked Russell about that last year, and he said, you know, he did. Like last year, he believed he could be, you know, he was the best player out there. But I don't really think he believed it. You know, there was a kind of a fake it till you make it sort of thing.
Right.
He was out there last year. And this year, he's still wrong if he thinks he's the best player on the floor. But he can go out there and believe that more. And it's much more legitimate. And he is, I think, very obviously the best player on the team. And so, you know, I think he understands it. I think he's playing with that kind of confidence. And what's tricky about it is he is the guy who has to both score some points because the Lakers are going to need him to be a scorer, and he's also the guy who needs to get everybody else involved. And one of the ways that he can get people involved is by scoring the ball, which draws more attention, which opens up the floor. And so that balance for him between being, you know, a great scorer and a great distributor and also being a leader, you know, and making sure as a point guard he's getting everybody, that's going to be really tricky for him. The other night, what was it? Which game was it? We had, you know, the 30 points and the 11 assists.
That was 2 games ago, I think.
Yeah, that was perfect. I mean, that was like everything you could possibly want. But most nights, I think it's going to be tricky to find that balance. I mean, I suspect you guys would agree that there are going to be a lot of, you know, post-game postmortems were all like, did D'Angelo shoot too much? Did he pass too much? Was he aggressive enough? Was he not? I mean, that's going to be one of the themes that runs throughout the year.
He's the new Kobe.
Right. Well, and I think early in the season, we're going to see him fall back on his scoring because I feel like that comes a little bit more naturally to him. And as the season goes along and he gets more used to the system and which guys are looking to get involved where, I think his you know, facilitating numbers will jump on, you know, a little bit, will improve a little bit as the season goes on. But yeah, with the scoring stuff, I like how I don't know if I'm ready to call him a new Kobe, mostly because Kobe was Kobe, but I could see it kind of working out where every game is going to be microanalyzed. Should he have shot this pass here? Should he have, you know, thrown that bounce pass there? How is that going to work out? Do you think he's ready for that kind of scrutiny, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he cares. I mean, that's what I like about the kid is I don't think he really cares that much about that kind of stuff. I think he believes in his talent and his ability and what he's supposed to do, and then I think it helps that he's going to get supported by the coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Luke has said over and over and again, when he is open, we want him to shoot. And I think that's correct. I mean, it screws things up when guys don't take open shots. Mm-hmm. And even if that means he shoots 3 or 4 shots in a row sometimes, if they're wide open, high percentage shots, and as long as guys know that he will make the pass when the pass is the right play, I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with it.
Well, plus also, too, I mean, when it comes to D'Angelo and scrutiny, I think he, after what happened last year, where all he was being scrutinized over is he a punk? Is he immature? Everything that went on between him and Nick Young, I think he would welcome the idea of just being scrutinized as a basketball player.
Yes.
And I mean, really, mm-hmm. I think he would welcome the idea of, okay, if people want to talk about, am I a ball hog? Okay, fine, whatever. I'd rather have them talk about that than am I responsible for breaking up Nick Young's marriage?
Right, and it's tangible stuff, too, that if he's getting scrutinized for, yeah, he should have maybe passed here, he should have maybe shot there, that's more tangible than is he mature, because there's no way to know until you really sit down and talk with the kid. All right, great stuff so far on D'Angelo Russell. He's going to take steps forward this year, so be ready to look for that and what he does on and off the court as a leader of this young Lakers team. Before we move on and get to some of the other players that we're going to talk about, I want to quickly mention Mack Weldon. They're the sponsor of this show. You promo code LO Lakers to get 20% off of their merchandise there. Basically, Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. They feel comfortable guaranteeing that, so comfortable that, you know, with your first purchase there, if you buy the clothes and don't like how it is, you can ask for a refund and they'll let you keep that clothing. So that takes some kind of confidence there. It's the fabrics that they use are insanely comfortable. They're really long lasting too. I was just at the hospital this past weekend, welcoming my niece into this world, and I was in the t-shirt that I was in for going on 16 or so hours, and by the end of the day, the t-shirt still felt really fresh. I never felt, you kind of get that grubby feeling after being the same clothes for a long time. Didn't feel that at all. And the same goes for all of their clothing across the line. They have great socks, great boxers, great boxer briefs, all that good stuff. And again, make sure you're using the promo code LOLAKERS to get your 20% off of what you buy there. Now, let's go ahead and get back to the show. I couldn't help but feel like while we were talking about D'Angelo Russell, that some of the stuff that we were talking about kind of revolves around whatever's going on with him in the backcourt and that starting unit. So I was going to bring up Clarkson last. I'll talk about him, I guess, now. Brian, are you on board with Clarkson as a sixth man if that's the direction that they are going with?
I don't bother me. I there are a lot of people, I mean, if you ask around the league, I mean, that seems to be kind of a consensus of what he is. You know, on a good team, Jordan Clarkson is an excellent sixth man, a good scorer who can move the ball, you know, particularly if he can develop into a good defender. I mean, that to me is, I don't have a problem with it. And I in the '80s felt the same way. And, you know, we've had this conversation with different players throughout the years. I am less concerned about who starts and more concerned about who finishes. If Clarkson's playing 19 minutes a game, you know, 16, that's a problem, but he's right. Not going to. And so if Lou Williams starts, Clarkson's probably going to finish games if, in fact, he continues to develop defensively, because you want your best defensive players out on the floor at the end of the game, you know, assuming that they can score and they can do the other stuff, and Clarkson obviously can. And, you know, there is an argument to be made with the rotation that it makes more sense to put a better defender next to Calderon or Huerta. It's probably Calderon. Mm-hmm. And support that group, and where your Mozgov is not going to be in the game as much, and you're not going to have a classic rim protector and a guy who can get up and defend that part of the floor. It's going to be Tarik Black and Julius Randle and Larry Nance, and you're going smaller and all that. Having a better perimeter defender makes sense. I don't care if he plays 27, 28, 31, whatever the number is, as long as it's a good amount of minutes that he should get, I don't care where they come.
I guess the only thing that concerns me, because we spoke about how much D'Angelo Russell has to do offensively, the burden of facilitating and, you know, creating for himself offensively. And then whenever he's on the court with Lou Williams, he's probably going to be the best defender of the two players. And that concerns me, that he's going to have to do all that with on offense, and then he's going to have to turn around and maybe guard a point guard or two. And am I overthinking that, or do you think, you know, should we just say it's only for a few minutes at the start of the game, and then Clarkson's going to come in and be the better defender anyway?
Well, I don't think you're overthinking it. My thought is just, look, if D'Angelo Russell wants to be, you know, somewhere between an all-star caliber player or an elite player, which is what the Lakers drafted him to be, then you're going to have to play on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, that's going to be expected of you anyway. So get started. You know, I mean, get going with that process. This first year, there's going to be a lot of times where he fails in that more than he succeeds. I mean, we've seen this preseason, the better the point guard he's matched up against D'Angelo, you know, whether you're talking about Damian Lillard or Steph Curry, his numbers have dropped. And I think that's in part because guarding Damian Lillard or Steph Curry will take it out of you. I mean, that's exhausting. But it's something he's got to get used to. I'm with Brian. I don't have an issue with Clarkson coming off the bench, because unlike the way Byron did this stuff last year with D'Angelo and Julius Randle, there's a method to the madness. Mm-hmm. And it's not just out of, you know, prove yourself to me, kid, you know, like rookie stripes crap that, you know, is just – it's more tough than it actually is love, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
The only argument I would say potentially you'd make against Clarkson coming off the bench is if you consider Russell and Clarkson the backcourt of the future for this team, then you want to try getting them as many minutes as possible together in tandem to try to build them that way. But assuming Walton can configure the rotations where those guys, you know, if I had to guess, close out a lot of second and fourth quarters, close out a lot of halves together, then I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. And like Brian said, I think it can actually help the bench. You need most credible teams have an instant offense guy off the bench, and maybe it could be Nick Young. You can make that argument. But again, as long as you handle Clarkson the right way, I don't consider it problematic.
So you mentioned Nick Young in passing, and I would say aside from Nick, I think Julius has done the most to kind of get people more assured in what he might be able to bring to the table. I was concerned about, you know, I didn't know what he might be long term, but I've liked Randall's, you know, assertiveness on offense, his activity on defense. He still has some bad habits, but overall, I'd say he's had a really nice preseason here. There was this weird moment, or there was this weird time where Julius Randle and Larry Nance Jr. were seen as an either or thing. But I feel like the easiest way to handle this is just to keep both guys and then figure out different roles for them. Is that possible, though, with how many minutes you would hope that each guy, Larry Nance Jr. and Julius Randle, might be able to play moving forward?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't see why. I lie. I mean, good teams have many good players, and they figure it out. And, you know, I think Nance has some versatility, and it looks like Randle is developing some versatility. He's 21 years old, man. It was funny. I did Spectrum, the shows on Spectrum last night. That would be Monday night? Yeah, Monday night. And, you know, the Draymond comparison came up. Well, can he be the Draymond Green for the Lakers? And, you know, in the same way that, you know, can Ingram be the KD and all these – these things. Well, all we're doing is we're taking guys who look alike, and we find another person who looks like him. So Durant is really skinny, and Ingram is really skinny, and so we'll compare them. And I realize the skill sets are somewhat the same, but Brandon Ingram didn't come into the league with the same kind of offensive polish as KD. He just isn't. Mm-hmm. And you know, Randall is an undersized power forward. Well, Draymond Green is an undersized power forward. Maybe they can do the same thing. Draymond averaged, you know, 14, like 10 and a half, and almost 8 assists a game last year, and shot 40% from 3-point range. He is miles ahead of where Julius Randle can be, and to even make these sorts of comparisons, I think it kind of does a disservice, really, to Julius. But
it is worth noting, though, that Julius actually came into the league, I think, more polished than Draymond Green. And a better player than Draymond did.
I don't agree with that.
I'm not trying to make a comparison. The point being, just there, if you spend too much time trying to play the comparison game, I think you can miss what you have in a player. That's my larger point.
I agree with Andy. That kind of gets what I'm getting at. Like, Draymond was a better defender when he came into the league, and he was a better passer when he came into the league. And, you know, the important thing with Randle is that he wants to get better in that stuff. You know, if he gets three quarters of the way down the Draymond road to where the Lakers can be that guy where, you know what, you can take Randle and put him up against any center in the league and go small and not give up anything inside, and you have your own lineup of death and do all these great things, and he can step outside and shoot three-pointers, and there, you know, you can't put a center on the floor against him now because they can't cover the ground. If all that happens, great. But, you know, you're probably going to need Randall to do certain things for you and Nance to do other things for you. And you're gonna need a bridge. You know, Ingram is gonna have to bridge probably over the course of his career anywhere from a two guard to a power forward. You know, who knows? In 5 or 6 years, depending on what the league looks like, maybe you line up Ingram as a really skinny, tall five. I mean, who knows? But, you need good players. And the more good players the Lakers have, the better off they are. If Randall can guard 4 and 5 at some point, and Nance can guard 3, 4 in the occasional 5, and Ingram can swing it, I'm not worried about, is there enough space for these guys? I mean, good teams go 6 or 7 or 8 guys deep, and they manage to figure out ways for everybody to have a real role and to play. And so if the Lakers find themselves with that kind of problem, great.
So regarding, I guess, Nance then, I've been a little disappointed with his lateral quickness, but for the most part, he's done what I would like to see Larry Nance Jr. be able to do. Andy, could you see the Lakers going with the small ball five lineup with either Julius Randle or Larry Nance Jr. for prolonged stretches, or not? I wouldn't say prolonged stretches, but for, could we see it in more than half the games this year, do you think?
I think it depends on how small the lineup they're going against is, because you are giving up a lot of rim protection with Julius Randle, and with presumably at the five. You're giving up so much rim protection.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, contradict what I just said in terms of playing the comparison game. If you're having Draymond Green as your defensive, as your small ball five, he's a much better defender than Randall.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it operates a little bit better. So you have to start thinking about everything that you're giving up. Okay, you're giving up rim protection. You're giving up size. You're giving up spacing, because right now, neither Randall nor Nance is reliable from shooting outside. So you really have to think about the matchups and just, okay, how much are we giving up in doing this? And then in the meantime, what are we actually gaining? Like, you have to think about what actually do we gain from playing the small ball? You know, that there, when people think a lot about small ball now, they start thinking more literal in terms of height. Like, they start thinking about, okay, who is the 6'8 guy or 6'7 guy that we can plug in here? And, oh, obviously, that'll work. It's Julius Randle. If you're comparing to teams that play small ball that it actually works, you have to think more about skill set. You have to think more about the five guys you're lining up together and how they create those matchups. Draymond Green is a big reason that the Warriors can get away with playing small ball five, and it's specifically Draymond Green.
I'll go one step further. He is the reason. He is not bigger. He is the reason. And this is the thing. Like, there is no comp to Draymond around the league. There really isn't, because
there hasn't been historically. Like, we're finally seeing it now, and people are now, every time we see a tweener, we think, oh yeah, he could be Draymond Green, but that's not
right.
How it works.
But that's what we do. If Brandon Ingram were white, we'd be scrambling to find a white guy that we could compare him to, because generally speaking, we take the easiest, most cosmetic thing that we can kind of find and do the match that way. And since
Keith Van Horn, skinny, white shooter.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we do. And so, Draymond was runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year last year, and many people think he should have won.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and the reason people think it is because of what he allows Golden State to do. Julius Randle wants to get better defensively, and he wants to be. And Nance, as much as I love him as a team defender, he's not that good. I mean, let's understand who they are. Much more conventional players. Neither one of them can step way out on the floor and hit a jump shot, certainly not reliable three-point shooters. I think both of them will do more of that this year than they did last year. And Randall's 21, and I think Draymond was talking about that after the game the other night. At 21 years old, Randall's got a lot of room to get better. I think Nance probably is much closer to what he is, but you can look at him and say, whatever his ceiling is, he's going to hit it because he's smart and he works hard, and that's the kind of guy that he is. And his ceiling is probably either, the fifth guy in a really good starting lineup who is just solid fundamentally all the way around and whatever. But is kind of a glue guy or a really, really good bench player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they drafted that with what, 27? That's fantastic if that's what they get. I'm okay with all these things, but I don't think you can't compare, you know, either one of them in a way to try to like get the Lakers to that sort of, I'm not saying you are, Anthony, we're just, but like, you know, people do it to get the Lakers to that Golden State style small ball. It's just not,
I was just going to say, it's important to remember Walton is bringing over certain things from the Warriors system and the Warriors culture. He's not looking to literally recreate the Warriors. That would be a mistake, and Luke is smart enough to recognize that would be a mistake. The personnel is a, you know, above philosophy, above culture, above Steve Kerr. The personnel is what makes what they do work. Steve Kerr is a very good coach, and I think the front office is very solid there. They can't do what they do unless they have the players that they have, and I think Walton's smart enough to realize that.
Absolutely. So I'm here. I'm looking. We'll kind of segue awkwardly, I guess, but we'll.
Yes.
Those
are the best kind.
That's the only kind I do. But I'm looking here at the NBA GM survey, and this question or this result surprised me the most. And it was, which rookie will be the best player in 5 years? And you have Ben Simmons at 70%, which kind of makes sense. He seems to have the highest ceiling. But then the next guy is Chris Dunn at 20%, and Ingram only got 6.7% of the vote. That seems really, really, really low to me because of what he could potentially become. You know, the elite small forwards, I would argue, are the most valuable commodity in the NBA. And if he can become that, then, you know, all of that. But does that, did the numbers strike you as they did me? Because maybe I'm just not as high on Chris Dunn. Andy, we'll start with you on this one.
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I had thought much about it, you know, heading up to this point, just because we've seen so little of any of these guys. But when you think about it, it's not that surprising because you're basing some of this off what you see in the preseason. Ben Simmons hasn't played yet. So at this point, he is all upside and imagination. He is every bit as good as you want to imagine him being. And, you know, some of what we saw in summer league, he looked pretty damn good. And Chris Dunn has also looked pretty good in preseason and in summer league. But then you get down to Brandon Ingram, who has shown flashes, I think, particularly defensively, of what he can be. And his shot is starting to fall. But he struggled through a lot of this. And in particular, too, he struggled because of physicality in his frame. I mean, it's really clear how much strength he needs to gain to make it as a high-end NBA player. And there's no reason to doubt that he can't do it. But for the time being, you're seeing what's holding Ingram back. So I can see why that might make some GMs a little bit lower on him right now, because that weakness is really glaring.
Yeah, and look, I hate college basketball. I don't watch it, so I don't know. When draft time comes around, what I do is when people ask us all the time, do you think, you know, is Ingram better than Dunn? Should they take Dunn? Should they take, you know, Moutier? Is Moutier better than Russell? I have no idea. I hate college basketball, and I've watched maybe these guys play a couple of times, and I'm totally unqualified to answer. I read what people who do that kind of work do, and then kind of aggregate the answers and say, does this work with what the Lakers need? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Ingram's going to be better than Dunn. I don't know how good their ceilings are. It seems like Ben Simmons, when you watch summer league and stuff like that, looks like the real deal. And Ingram, you know, it's hard to tell exactly what he's going to be because he just turned 19, and Dunn is 3 years older. Mm-hmm. If I'm correct. I mean, I think he's, you know, 21, 22. You know, Ingram just turned 19. And so, you know, if he ends up the second or third or fourth best player in this draft, probably means he turned into a pretty good player, because this isn't the Michael Carter Williams draft where, you know, half these guys wouldn't have gone in the top 10 or the top 15 in a normal year. People, you know, this was the draft with some decent players in it. They need Russell or Ingram to turn out to be high-end players. They don't, you know, one of those two guys needs to really pop as a number two. You know, if Ingram gets to perennial borderline all-star, and Russell is, you know, a perennial all-star, I think that's okay. You know, it's better if they both get there. But, you know, the truly transcendent players in the league are very rare. And
what Ingram can't just be, he can't be bad. Yeah. He cannot be a bad player. That will set the Lakers back far if he's not good. If he's merely very good as opposed to transcendent, depending on how the other guys shake out, the Lakers are going to be fine.
Right. It's just that, you know, he is so skinny and he's so, I mean, he started slow at Duke too. I mean, this is not unusual. You go look at Dunn's preseason stats. They're not leaping off the page. I mean, I think he's shooting about 20%. I mean, it's not like he's killing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at his numbers. Yeah, he is, I think, actually shooting 20%. The GM survey is always fun, but it's not the kind of thing people should take too seriously when it comes to this, because most people believe that Brandon Ingram is going to be a very good player once he fills out. I mean, look at the leap that Russell made from year one to year two, and Russell was older by, I think, 6 months than Ingram when he got in the league. And 6 months when you're 19 is a big deal.
Well, think about, too, I mean, Brian, you just mentioned Russell as a rookie last year. The first time that Moutier and Russell matched up against him, it was like the second or third game of the season last year, Moutier outplayed Russell, and people were freaking out in part because Moutier was so much thicker and strong. I mean, he looked like he could have been D'Angelo Russell's father. Like, I mean, he's like that much bigger and, you know, more physical and looked just more adult. And you forget about that now with D'Angelo because he thickened up over the season, and this year he just looks like a confident NBA player. But it's easy to forget how much these guys really have to transition and learn as rookies.
And how quickly and how long it takes to switch. I mean, like, you know, Moutier had that incredible first week and basically fell off a cliff. And Russell had, you know, 4 or 5 bad games to start the season. And it took until like March before anybody like nationally realized that Russell had basically outplayed Moutier all season long. It took a long time for people to catch up to that. You know, so, first impression, you know, there you go, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty much
it's how it works.
It's pretty much turned into you open the season well or you close the season well, and people will think of you completely differently than if you play just pretty well throughout the entire season. And
this Mac Biombo and the money he got this, you know, I mean, if you told Lakers fans in, I don't know, basically before the playoffs started, that, you know, you could have Bismack Biyombo for $65 million. They'd be that is insane. And even then, you know,
their reaction would be, who's Bismack Biyombo?
That is right.
They have no idea who the guy even is.
And so, you know, when you look at the numbers that he put up in the playoffs, and he had some huge games. He also had some games where he literally did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, statistically useless games, you know, 5 rebounds and like 1 block in 20 minutes. So the guy was all over the place, but, you know, because, you know, you do that one or two things, it kind of puts you puts the image out there. And now all of a sudden Bismack Biyombo is young and exciting and he's going to grow and he's a good player. But, you know, it also, you know, you can criticize the Mozgov signing, but it's not like 65 or 64, 65 million for Biyombo or Jan Mahinmi is the kind of thing where if you really are paying attention to what these guys have done over the course of their career and what their skill sets are, where you go, that is awesome. Like, I love that money. Nobody would say
that. Yeah, it was impossible to feel great about any money spent over this past offseason because it was so much higher than we've previously seen with the cap going up the way it did. We were going to talk about the blogging and stuff like that, but honestly, we have we'll just move on.
Inside baseball.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll go ahead and we'll move on then to kind of how we see the season playing out for the Lakers. How we see, you know, what we define success with. I hope nobody listening is still defining it with wins. Don't do that. But you
50.
Know, I said 82-0 on another podcast somewhere.
That's not real.
Yeah. So we talked about what Ingram can't be, and we talked about what D'Angelo Russell could be and what Julius Randle could be. How would we define success then, Brian, on those guys collectively coming together, and what are we looking for as the season goes along?
It's, for me, it's very similar to last year, except you remove any of the parts about, like, you know, and Kobe puts on a decent show for the fans. Mm-hmm. It's if every night you watch the team and you say, okay, that's cool, I'm looking forward to that. Like, don't I will make the same recommendation this year that I did last year. Take a piece of tape and put it over the spot on the TV where the score goes. Mm-hmm. And just put that over it so you never see the score. And just watch the players. Watch Russell and Russell more than those other guys. You should see a few times a game where you're like, ooh, that was – I like this. You know, Ingram, you want to see as the season develops. You know, one play a game, two plays a game, you're like, okay, I get it. That's why this kid's going to be special. That's why he was taken at number two. You know, and hopefully you look up at the end of the year, Russell, Randall, Clarkson, Nance have all gotten better. Russell looks like a guy who could be an A-lister player in the league. You get the feeling that as soon as his body catches up to the rest of the league, that Ingram is going to be, you know, a great player. Randall becomes that sort of, I think his ceiling's probably that kind of near all-star, solid double-double player every night, which is great. I mean, every team should have one of those. And, you know, you kind of look up and they're buying into Walton and they're buying into what's going on. And you know, there's a culture there and everybody can see where the future is going. Mm-hmm. And then you open up the paper. Or nobody does that. You go on the internet and you look at the standings. You go to your phone, you look up the standings, and lo and behold, the Lakers still only have 24 wins and are well positioned to keep their pick one more year if they can get lucky in the lottery. And they get to add one more player despite having this season of growth where you can see the potential. That to me is like, that's the best case scenario for Lakers fans this year. And I don't think it's that unrealistic. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know about you guys. It feels to me to be a completely different atmosphere, a completely different team, a completely different setup. And I'm actually excited to watch games again this season, as opposed to the last couple seasons, where quite frankly, I've been less excited.
Yeah, I found myself, it was preseason games, and I found myself waking up and like, hey, the Lakers play today. I haven't felt like this in like 2 years. Weird how that, I wonder what was the connection there. I did find myself while I was watching, and I was able to go to a game with Laker film room, Pete Zayas, and it was kind of nice. And I looked up at the score, and even with the Lakers not playing all that great, now Damian Lillard didn't play extended minutes, obviously, and had he might have dropped 100 points on him. But if I was watching and I found myself, I kind of looked up and said, hey, they're still kind of keeping it close here. And they go to overtime. They wind up losing in overtime. And I feel like that's how we're going to watch much of this season where, hey, we saw a couple cool things. Whoa, this is closer than I thought it'd be. And then they lose and then you kind of move on. But Andy, how can I guess the general casual fan, how can they isolate themselves, aside from putting actual tape on their TV, how can they isolate themselves from the expectations that come with wins and losses? Because this is still such uncharted territory for a Laker franchise that before the last couple of years had only missed the playoffs, I guess, 25% of their existence.
Well, I mean, if they're that casual fans, I would remind them the context of the season and everything that's led up to this point. And I've said this a bunch on ESPN LA 710. As much as the last few years have been filled with a lot of losing, and typically losing is part of a rebuild, it's felt like a rebuild, but this is the first season of an actual rebuild. Mm-hmm. And as frustrating as that might be to think about for some fans because they've had to deal with all the losing, the reality is if you're starting the first year of a rebuild, the first genuine, we are no longer embarrassed, we are no longer trying to hide it, we are acknowledging what it is, rebuild. If you are starting the first season of a rebuild with Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, guy like Larry Nance Jr., prospect like Zubats, there are worse places you can be to start building that foundation. Besides the Minnesota Timberwolves, who just by virtue of having Karl Anthony Towns have the best group of young players, I think, in the league, like the most promising foundation, because also Andrew Wiggins looks like a really good player, and I think Zach LaVine's actually better than a lot of people think he is. Mm-hmm. Remove the Timberwolves. There may not be a better collection of young talent around the league, at least potentially, than the Lakers. I mean, you can make a case for them. And that is a really good place to be in. I think it's also, it's interesting that the way the schedule shakes out, the Lakers play the Warriors in like their sixth or seventh game, something like that. And then maybe 3 weeks later, play the Warriors again. And then they close the season with the Warriors. And I actually think that's a pretty good tool for really gauging the progress that's been made this season. Because you can remember, okay, how did they look against one of the best teams in the league, definitely the best team in the West at the beginning of the season? And then how did they look at the end of the year? And I think that could be, you know, assuming everybody stays healthy and all that stuff, I think that can give you a pretty good gauge of how this team is progressing and what's being built. And I'm fairly confident that by the time that last game rolls around, fans are going to like what they see. It's not going to be a complete, you know, a complete picture. And, you know, if they win 27 games, you know, that would be a really strong season. I mean, that's 10 more games than last season. A 10-game jump is massive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think fans are going to like what they see. And for the first time in a while, they're going to start feeling not just confident in the direction of this franchise, but actually just they'll be able to see an actual direction. The last few years have just been spent treading water and running in place and desperately trying to avoid any appearances of a rebuild. I think you're going to start seeing a direction this year. And I think that's something fans have been dying to see.
And we alluded to it earlier in the podcast, but there's still a chance that the Lakers have yet another top three pick coming, you know, and if they do win, you know, somewhere between 23 and 27 games or whatever, that still puts them in that area where they can still realistically get their keep
still
their pick.
Point flip territory, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's something else that, you know, will gain steam as the season goes along. Team Tank will make yet another appearance. But yeah, I completely agree. This season has a completely different vibe than seasons past. There's genuine excitement, not just, you know, from your guys' spot where you've been around the team, but then you kind of expand that out to the blogosphere and how excited everybody else is who spends a lot of time watching the team. But it's crazy how many people, how often, you know, if I say, you know, when I wear a Lakers shirt out there, it's like, hey, you know, Russell, you know, and it hasn't just been, well, they aren't going to have Kobe, you know, and it's been kind of nice.
This is an exciting period, I think, mm-hmm. and I happen to be a Laker fan, you know, in addition to doing this job. I rooted for the Lakers before I ever thought I'd possibly be doing something like this. This is like the first time maybe in ever that you've seen the Lakers building from the ground up. This is not something they normally do. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, other fan bases, friends of mine who, you know, root for different teams, I know they've really enjoyed the process of seeing a young group built up together. And, you know, obviously it needs to break the way the Lakers want it to. But that type of prospect, at least to me, that's exciting to watch. And you recognize, okay, I may be here right now at the ground floor of something that could be really significant. Or like the way, if you're a Dodger fan, you watched Clayton Kershaw, you know, his mm-hmm. career from the beginning to where he is now. And then, you know, maybe some of the prospects they have, you know, young guys like Seager and Peterson and things like that. That's exciting to watch, I think. And for the Lakers, it's rare excitement. You don't see this. So I think this is actually a really intriguing chapter in the history of this franchise.
I completely agree. And this was a lot of fun. Speaking of exciting, this was incredibly exciting being able to talk with you guys about basketball for a long time. I actually used to call in I've considered calling in to the post game just so I could sneak in a conversation with you guys, but this worked out a lot better, I think. thank you greatly for coming on the show today. I would hope that, you know, maybe we could do this again as the season goes along. Can I put you guys down for that?
Yeah, we got 6 months to kill. Why not? It'd be fun, man. It'd absolutely be fun.
Awesome. Yeah, Harrison was really bummed he couldn't make it. So he'll be happy to hear that you guys are interested in coming back on to talk with him. And he said, to quote, I'm quoting him directly, and he's going to kill me for quoting him directly. He said, tell them I'm going to seek them out at the game, but try to not make it sound super creepy. And so he's going to be.
Yeah, no, that's creepy.
Especially now that you put it out there, Harrison. Now it's super creepy.
Yeah, he's going to. Harrison, you should be focused on the game, and he's going to be sitting there looking for you guys.
Are you going to, like, Trump stalk us? Like, how's it going to work?
If you hear a bunch of sniffles over your shoulder.
Andy and I are very, very busy people. We don't have – we have time for you. We don't have time for Harrison.
You heard that here, Harrison. You might be verified, but guess who got to talk to the Cambros?
Harrison can talk to – you can call us. Harrison can talk to our people.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks thanks very much for hopping on, and, yeah, we'll talk to you as the season goes along.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. And that was the Kamenitsky brothers. Like I said at the beginning, the very beginning of the show, this was a lot of fun. I hope you guys had as much fun listening as I did and we did recording. We have more shows coming for you in the coming weeks. We have we might have a crossover podcast with Locked On Clippers to talk about basketball in Los Angeles, the battle for LA. That might be coming later in the week, but so make sure you look for that. Make sure you're following on the shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using the promo code. Today's show was brought to you by Mack Weldon, so make sure you're using the promo code LO Lakers to get your 20% off of Mack Weldon merchandise. They've been great for us, and so we want to make sure that we are treating them similarly. We are meeting them halfway, and we would really appreciate it if you helped us out in that regard. So we will talk to everybody again tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and shouts to Slava Medvedenko!
Or Slava Medvedufas.